Hey guys, it's Payne. I'm really excited to introduce a brand new show to Bet the Board that combines sports and alternative investing, the very first of its kind. Sports betting and collectibles converging is inevitable. Let me tell you why. Sports cards and memorabilia are another way to get money into the market and do it without limit restrictions or the substantial hold you're accustomed to with sports betting. Whether you collected cards as a kid and are looking to get back into the hobby, this podcast is for you. If you've been collecting cards for years, this podcast will make you think and operate more efficiently. Are you in real estate? The parallels to investing in sports cards and memorabilia are uncanny. You're on Wall Street? Well, listen close. The best sports cards have outperformed the S&P 500 by 6x since 2013. And during the 2008 market crash, sports cards held up better than the S&P 500. Bet the Board, in conjunction with PWCC, presents Cardboard Chat, an entertaining, sophisticated, and informative podcast that combines sports, analytics, betting, cards, and memorabilia. Without further ado, this is Cardboard Chat with Jesse Craig, a leading figure in the collectible space, and me, Payne. I'm surprised you made it. I heard you had a wild weekend with the boys, golfing, throwing back a few. I fully assumed I'd get a text message Monday morning saying, hey, we need to have a bye week. Every NFL team needs one. I need one here. But here you are.
Hey, look, I'm a professional. I did have a great weekend. Went to Bandon Dunes, which is just, if you're a golfer and you have a chance to go play, you know, some amazing golf, come out to Oregon. It's about 4 hours south of Portland, and they have 5 18-hole courses. They have a 13-hole par three, and it's some of the most beautiful, picturesque golf you'll ever see. It's like, you know, Tony said this the other day, if you just pick up some land in Scotland and just dropped it in Oregon, that's basically what you're looking at. I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. So we had a blast.
Were you a better golfer or drinker?
Definitely drinker, and that seems to be status quo as of late.
Okay, now that everyone knows you're in the territory of Oregon and the Ducks, talk to me. What transpired this weekend in the rivalry game for Washington to go into Eugene as a 13-point underdog and win outright?
I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong, basically, right? It really was one of those games, and of course for us, the most important game of the year at this point, because not only were we still looking at making the college football playoff, but you know, we've got the most hated team on our schedule every single year is the Huskies. And it hurts my soul when we lose to them, and we hadn't lost to them in years in Eugene. So it was tough. A few coaching blunders by our first year head coach, Mr. Lanning. You know, you don't do an onside kick, what, 2 out of the last 4 weeks randomly. Like, I don't know why you do an onside kick right there and you give them free 3 points. That made absolutely no sense to me. Not calling a timeout when Bo wanted to go back in on a short 4th and 2 in your own territory. That was the, you know, another deciding factor in the game to get him back in once he was hurt. I just, so many things you can point at, right? But that's what happens after losses. But
Did you agree with going for it on 4th and 1?
I did if Bo was in the game, not with Ty Thompson.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Ty didn't do anything wrong. You know, it was, you know, Winningham, he slipped, but it still was not the right play call with Ty at quarterback, in my opinion.
Gotcha. All right. So our listeners are like, boy, I didn't really tune in here to hear about Ducks football. Yeah. And
guys,
this
whole podcast is going to be about Oregon, just so you know.
It's not. We're going to get a little bit more serious here. The last episode, we talked about how to handle downswings in the market. And of course, we got some emails and some follow-up questions. And so the most obvious here is, where are sports cards and the alternative assets heading in the future? Give me a look 12 to 18 months, 3 to 5 years from now. I mean, you don't have to divulge everything, but obviously there are some big players entering this space. We've seen some large evaluations on some buy-ins recently of $4 billion in one company, and we know Fanatics has bought some licenses. It feels like there's too many big players for the market to dip too much further. But talk to me about the data that you guys have at PWCC and where you envision things heading short term and long term.
Yeah, I'd agree with the fact that it feels like we're hitting near the bottom based on all the infrastructure and investment that there's been. But look, politics has a play in all this too, right? You know, I think the right was expecting to win the Senate and hoping that we could have a little bit more control and maybe getting a boost economically from that, but that didn't happen. And I think that's going to affect us over the next month or two. But the elephant in the room is Fanatics and what they can bring to the table for our space, not only from an infrastructure perspective, but an awareness perspective. I mean, here's a company that has 80 million registered users and they're sports fans. So that is a huge boon for our space once they're able to use that microphone that they have to inform everyone of how amazing trading cards is, because I know that you and I both believe it, and a lot of people listening to this do as well. So, you know, Fanatics coming on board, a lot of things that I know that we're working on here to really help, you know, not the high end necessarily, not even the middle, but the lower end, the, you know, your average Joe, the average guy that wants to get into the space, that might have some stuff laying around, wants to sell it, get some money and buy some new stuff. I mean, those are the tools and the infrastructure that we're really trying to support here. We launched a new partnership with a company called MBA, Mike Baker Authenticated, where you can send cards into us and sell them for, it only costs you $3 to get it authenticated if you sell it in the next 30 days. And so, you know, that pricing for $3 to get something authenticated is unmatched in our space. And we have the platform to sell it on. We have all the infrastructure in order to do it. So these are the kind of things in order to get more people in, continue progressing as a whole, as a space, that need to be done. And, you know, we're trying to lead the charge on a lot of this.
And you are, and you have been for a number of years. And obviously that's why we're doing the show with you. That's why I personally use you guys, whether it's purchasing, selling, or vaulting with you guys. So good to hear that there's some positive sentiment despite some prices dipping. It just feels like it's transpiring in all markets. And there are certainly little spaces, some nooks and crannies where things have gone up over the last month, year, 6 months, whatever it is. So there's things in this market that are performing well despite the turbulence and the downswing for the overall market, just like we've seen in the stock market. I mean, there's certain things that are up 10, 15% in the S&P 500, and then there's things that are just getting absolutely crushed. So it happens and unfolds that way in all markets, not just sports cards, collectibles, and memorabilia.
Totally agree. Yeah. And I mean, you even look at the way crypto's reacting to some of their news, I think could have a corollary to our market, as much as I don't like it to. But look, if you are worried about volatility, don't buy Modern. I mean, that's as easy yeah. as I can put it, right? Yeah. So it really just depends on if people are getting into the space, like, what are you looking for? Are you looking to flip? Are you looking to go long-term? I mean, I know we've talked about this before, but that's really what it boils down to. And you got to do a lot more research if you're looking for a quick turn. And when I say flip, I don't mean like a month or two. I mean like 6 months, 12 months. Long-term is 3, 5+ years. So vintage is the way to go if you're looking for that. By quality, we've talked about iAppeal. You know, but if you are looking to flip, it's going to be a lot more difficult to find stuff to go up in value short term. So if people, there's also people that have been in the space for the last couple of years since we really had the boom during COVID that are a little less educated on our space and how it operates. And so they might panic sell. They might do a few things that just are a detriment as a whole to the space, because timing, like we've talked about again, timing can be everything. And so, you know, there's a lot of factors that really go into it, but just do your research. Just be careful and make sure going into this, you know what you're looking for.
You said don't buy Modern, and I think that's a perfect time to transition here.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. It's time, folks. That's right. We're going to discuss undervalued and overvalued cards, or maybe even some memorabilia assets, potentially some players. Is it time to buy, sell, or hold on to these assets or players? We'll give you some opinions and back it up.
So you said not to buy Modern if you're looking to flip short term. And I think that's the perfect transition here, because we're going to get into some overvalued players and some overvalued cards. Typically, we are not in lockstep in terms of what we choose, but we both went the overvalued route this week. I'm going to let you lead the charge, Jesse. What you have here is a 2020 National Treasures Jalen Hurts RPA.
Yeah, just to clarify, when I say don't buy modern, I mean, it depends on your risk level, right? Like,
the, it was emphatic.
It really does, though. It was emphatic. But look, you know, modern, there's a play for modern, right? Like, there's still a lot of value that you can get out of some of these guys if you end up betting and you're right. But it's just more risky. So it's just, if you're a gambler, you want to roll the dice, well, sure. But if you're looking for kind of a more steady ROI and you want a safer play, then that's where you need to probably go the more vintage or retired player route. But jumping into this Jalen Hurts RPA, the reason I picked this card is actually because he has performed so well and because his cards have gone up in value. But this also feels like maybe a little bit of a flash in the pan, right? Like, can this happen for multiple years via Jalen Hurts, via the Eagles? Do they have all the pieces in play, or is this just kind of one of those anomaly years? And that's what it feels like to me. You know, all of a sudden the Eagles are for real. Like, really? Is that really what we're saying? Maybe it is, but it doesn't feel like it to me. So this card specifically has basically doubled in value depending on the patch and the grade since the season started. And I just think it's time where if you are a Jalen Hurts investor, it's time to take the money off the table, take your profits, because I can't see this. I could see this going up 20, 30, maybe 40% if he wins the Super Bowl this year, but he'd have to win the Super Bowl. I see it if they go 14-2 or 14-3. There's 17 games now. 14-3. They lose a few towards the end of the season, make a decent playoff run. I can see his cards just flatlining. But if they don't do that, if they don't make a deep run, then I could see it going down. I just think the risk is greater than the reward at this point for this card. So that's why I would still sell. And if you're looking at Super Bowl favorites, as the only undefeated team in the NFL, they still aren't the Super Bowl favorites. You still got the Bills as the favorites, and then you got the Eagles tied with the Chiefs. So there's not even a guarantee that they're going to make the Super Bowl, let alone win it.
I think that's a really good point, and there is a correlation with sports betting. We call it asymmetric risk, and it's basically what you just divulge there, in that if we're betting a game that's around a key number, like 3 or 7, those are the two largest key numbers in the NFL, typically when they sit on those numbers and you have a thought that you're going to want to be investing in that game, you have to understand that, hey, this might be the time to go, because if we lose that key number, it's not a play. So you kind of have to, like sports betting, gauge your asymmetric risk there. And I think you hit that perfectly. For me, when I look at Jalen Hurts, it's very easy to see the short-term path in value for his market, because the Eagles are 8-0. And we're recording a few hours before kickoff of the Commanders game Monday night, and Philly's an 11-point favorite, and that's going to translate to like a money line of roughly minus 550. So about an 85% chance the Eagles are getting to 9-0, according to oddsmakers. And you look at Jalen Hurts, here's one thing I will say about him. The guy's a worker. The guy loves football, right? He's passionate about it. And so when you're investing in players, you don't just want the talent. You want the guys that are willing to work. And he certainly molded himself into a better passer. And the way that his legs are and the addition of A.J. Brown really help open up that offense. Hurts right now, 6th best in QBR. He's also 6th in EPA plus completion percentage above expectation. You mentioned the Bills still being the favorite. The Vikings did go in there, upset the Bills on Sunday.
What a wild game.
Oh, absolutely unreal the way that unfolded. But Jesus. The Eagles at this point would appear that they are destined to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs in the NFC. And when you look at remaining schedules, the Eagles have the 8th easiest schedule from here on out. But I think you hit this perfectly in that Jalen Hurts' market across the board is up 70% since the start of the season. You mentioned this rookie NT specifically being about double what it was over the last 6 months. So the hype and potential Super Bowl run are already being priced into the market short term. And so you're probably right that this is time to move on from Jalen Hurts in the short term.
Right, right. And look, I want to be clear too. I actually think he's one of the better human beings in the NFL. The way that he handled the situation in Alabama, and I've seen him with kids and all that. I really, really like him as a person. This is just pure market. I just don't know how much upside his cards really have. And you really need someone in our space to get to Mahomes level, Josh Allen level, even though Josh Allen still hasn't technically done anything. you really have to be more consistent than just an 8-game flash in the pan. And so that's the reason why I just think now's the time.
People move on so quick too, right? They just remember what they saw. We saw with Patrick Mahomes even. The guy had won the Super Bowl, he'd won the MVP. That's it.
And it's like that in the NBA, in our market, and like all these modern players, it's what have you done for me lately? Now, if you can do it over a 3-4-5-year stretch of time, you get some longevity built in there and people trust you more, just like a Mike Trout. Or I think even Mahomes has kind of hit his floor and guys are like, okay, this guy's still really freaking good at football. I'm like, he's got an MVP. He's been to 2 Super Bowls. He won one. Like, his team's still really freaking good without Tyreek Hill, which I think was the big concern going into this year. It's like, how is that receiver core going to work with Mahomes without, you know, their biggest weapon? And they've done just fine.
Yep. You kind of hinted at some NBA modern guys being overvalued, and that's where I'm going. I have said this a couple times in passing prior shows, and it might upset and offend and piss some people off, but I'm not in the hot take business, so that's not what I'm aiming for here. But I think Luka is overvalued in the market right now. And we can have the debate whether he's the best player in the NBA this second. I think you could make that argument, right? The player efficiency rating says so. But his key card, which everyone is wildly familiar with, has the potential to sell for a number that would closely mirror Michael Jordan's PMG green the next time one would come up for auction or it sells privately. The last public sale for the PMG green Jordan was roughly $900K. There's been some whispers, of which I'm sure you are aware of, that if one were to show up or one were to become available privately, $4 million would be that number. So I think you get my point. Same ballpark here. And the idea of those cards selling in the same ballpark for the most known and accomplished athlete of all time is nuts to me. And yeah, Luka hasn't accomplished a thing. And unless Mark Cuban's willing to buy a championship, it doesn't appear as if Dallas is going to be a winner anytime soon. And I always kind of caution paying prices for players that just put up numbers and don't have accomplishments. And sure, Luka's awesome. But at these prices, you're betting on the idea that he becomes the, you know, 0.00001% player so he can be talked about like Jordan or LeBron 15 to 20 years from now. And, you know, comparing him to one of his peers, right? The idea that Luka's market cap is 2x Giannis, or that in the last 3 months, Luka's market on average is up about 10%, while Giannis's is down 10%, is laughable, considering one of these guys has won a championship and carried an organization that no one thought could possibly win to a ring. And I think Luka's just kind of fighting to get his team into the playoffs. And so for me, Luka's a little bit too risky, even with him attempting to average a triple-double. I mean, shit, we saw Russell Westbrook, right? Averaged a triple-double 4 different times in his career, 3 straight seasons. I couldn't give cardboard away to an Eskimo who ran out of wood trying to make a fire, right? Like, that's what we're up against here. And there's also, I think Luka's better than Dirk, right? But we have an example of a white European basketball player that actually won an NBA championship, that also played for the Dallas Mavericks, and Dirk Nowitzki. And 20 years later, you know, there's only a handful of Nowitzki cards that are truly relevant and sought after, and it's mostly because they're rookie cards and some of the most beloved key 90s sets of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, look, you said a word that I think summarizes Luka as a whole, and that's risk. That's it. It's that simple.
Yep.
I actually believe Luka is a generational talent. I think I love Dirk Nowitzki, but I think he is so much better as a whole than Dirk. And so it just comes down to risk. If you want to invest in Luka, you are banking on the fact this guy's winning multiple MVPs and multiple championships, because in our market in the NBA, that's what it takes to be relevant from a card perspective. I mean, look at Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson won 5 championships. He's one of the greatest point guards of all time. He's my favorite player of all time. And his cards are worth a fraction of what Kobe's are, of what LeBron's are. And the guy won 5 rings.
Right.
I mean, give me a break. So you have to perform in this space. And if you don't perform and you don't win championships, winning is the key. You got to win, and you got to be the best on your team and the best in the NBA. And so, you know, like you mentioned, Giannis, championship, multiple MVPs. I think, you know, We did two overvalued players this week, by the way. So I'm glad that we're, you know, we've kind of switched it up a little bit. But I might give a preview to next week, which is I think Steph Curry's undervalued.
Interesting.
That guy's amazing. So when it comes to Luka, you know, I don't disagree with you. I think it just, once again, it comes down to how much risk are you willing to have as a collector investor in this space. He's an incredibly fun player to watch. He's one of my favorite players in the league to watch if he stops complaining so much. That's the only downside I have for Luka. But once again, risk. That's what it comes down to.
That's what it comes down to. And the segment that we're going to trend to is one of our favorites. And it is just so wildly popular among a lot of our listeners that without further ado, let's get to it.
Pick a number, any number, whatever it may be. We got a number inside, but we want a magic number, all right? This is where we're going to pick a few big cards that enter in an auction over the next couple of days, and we're going to try and guess how much they sell for in advance. Throw out a number. We got one, too.
Okay, so we just talked about the risk associated with Luka, and when we start and dive into three cards in our magic number segment, let's start with something that doesn't carry a whole lot of risk, and that is the 1969 Topps Mickey Mantle SGC8 in near mint condition, and it does come with the PWCC excellent eye appeal. And you know, this is a Mickey Mantle Topps card. It's in his final playing days. This is the yellow last name variation, so there is a rarer white last name variation, which is a nice touch for a 1969 card, way ahead of its time there. The white variation is about eight times rarer if you look at the overall amount of pop report and the copies graded. But specific to this copy, again, great eye appeal. You guys assessed it in the top 15% of near mint copies because of the centering being fantastic and the registration and color is awesome. Despite some turbulence in the market, which we've kind of hinted at over the last 12 months, you know, this card has performed quite well. The Mantle brand has performed quite well, about 25% across the board in the last year. I will let you lead in this. Where would you like to go with your comp? And if you want to talk about the card a little bit, shoot.
Sure. Yeah. You know what? I'm surprised you let me lead it. This is actually the first time you've selected a card for Magic Number. So I'm surprised I could lead, but I'll take it. I'm going to lead it in. I'm going to lead us in.
Well, let's peel back behind the curtain here. You sent me... I don't want to get too far ahead, but we're going to talk about a soccer card. World Cup is around the corner. Jesse hit me with two soccer cards, and I'm like, listen.
It's that time of year. Or that time of every 4 years. We only get to do this every 4 years with the World Cup. I went a little World Cup heavy, and you want to go a little soccer heavy.
Yes, you want a little soccer heavy, and I'm the one who gets yelled at by the listeners. So instead of getting yelled at, I said, let's just keep one soccer card. Let's implement the vintage baseball card. Here we are. Have at it.
Okay. So you're right. The yellow variation, much less rare than the white letter. You know, there was a PSA 8 with an A sticker, so top 30%, that sold for about $4,400 a couple weeks ago. And then, you know, for an example, an ugly PSA 8, in my opinion, sold for about $2,800 2 weeks before that. So, you know, it almost went for, you know, call it 75% more, with the A sticker and the better eye appeal. Now, because this is SGC, which doesn't bring the premium that PSA does, but it is a PWCCE, I've got this thing at $3,350. Now, I think that might be a little conservative. If somebody falls in love with the eye appeal on this card, which is incredible, and this 1969 top set is Reggie Jackson's rookie, it is, honestly, it's one of my favorite sets for baseball. I really like it. It's a really hard card in general to find well centered. It's got just a really small border around it. There's a lot of print issues as well, but this is a really cool set. I really like this card, and yeah, I've got this one at $3,350.
That's a good damn price. Let me just put it that way. And when it comes to vintage, Jesse and I are going to be pretty close to one another compared to modern day stuff, because there isn't as much fluctuation and they sell a little bit more frequently, and there's readily available comps, and I'll just be candid. My number was about $50 higher than that, but I'm going to adjust for the sake of our listeners, for the sake of having a winner here and giving us a little an ability to have this land in between. I am going to go a touch higher than you, which I'm really, really struggling to do. I'm going to come in at $3,620 on this one. I'll be candid. My number was 3405. That was going to be my number. So we are. So I'm going to come up just a little bit higher so something can fall potentially in between. The next card, I think, is going to be drastically different. And boy, his market's probably a little cool right now. It is the 2012 National Treasures Russell Wilson rookie patch auto to 99 copies in BGS 95 gem mint condition. I will lead here. Okay. And again, when I look at this card, it's not player worn, so I tend to shy away from those. The autograph is a 9, so there's some bubbling, some streaking. When I look at Russell Wilson's market, it's dipped about 70% over the last 2 years.
Yikes.
And most of that has come in the last 12 months. And the sentiment around Russell Wilson seems really right now, right? Former teammates are taking some shots at him. Social media is starting to turn on him a bit because he acts like a cornball. And then obviously
that is about as nice as you can put it.
That is. Oh, the Subway commercial is so bad.
Oh my God, so cringeworthy.
So we've also seen regression on the field in Russell Wilson's final season in Seattle. It's really carried over into Denver. It's even worse. Right now, quarterback 27 out of 31 qualifiers. Ooh. In QBR, 27 out of 33 qualifying quarterbacks in EPA plus completion percentage above expectation. It looks like Russ has lost all of his pocket awareness. I was watching the Titans game on Sunday. He was hit 17 times. It was the most hits taken by a quarterback since Charlie Fry and Steve McNair in the same game in 2006. And
Charlie Fry, what a throwback.
Did you think you'd hear that name today?
No.
Okay. No. Listen, this is the data. You're the data on the card side. I'm the data on the football side. Here's one thing I can say, and Jesse, you probably know about this more than anyone, but as Mick told Rocky, women weaken legs. And since Sierra's come around, Russell Wilson has run out of all the goodies on the football field, okay? And if
I see what you did there.
I don't think Russell Wilson's going to make the Hall of Fame with this current trajectory towards the end of the season. And I'm not really liking where this is heading. I'm going to come in quite low here and go 6,200.
Okay. Okay, look, I picked this one for a couple of reasons. One, I knew it would be a very difficult card to price.
It's tough.
I thought we'd have a good wide range here. And two, I thought he would resurrect himself this year in Denver, and I picked him up in every fantasy league of mine. And let's just say that I don't have a very good record in fantasy in any league this year. It's been abysmal, absolutely abysmal. I wanted to give Russ a little dig here because I'm frustrated with him as a fantasy player. Look, we had...
I handled that for you. I buried him. Now it's your turn.
You buried him early. You started off and you ran with it. So we had almost an identical patch card, dual PSA 10. So PSA 10 auto and a 10 card grade sell a month ago for about $20,000. Obviously, his market's down since then. And this card is a Beckett 9.5 with a 9 auto. BGS normally sells for less than PSA, so on and so forth. So we're not too far apart, and I'm actually lower than you.
Really?
Yeah. I've got this at $5,375. $5,375. I think that with what he's been doing with the 9 auto, I just, in the commercials, his brand, everything is just, he's bottom of the barrel right now. And I just don't think the only people that are going to buy this card are people that own other ones, and they're going to try to help, you know, prop the market up a little bit and protect themselves. And outside of that, I don't think you have any new collectors or investors coming in to buy up Russ.
Wow. I thought I was coming in so low, it would be impossible for you to go lower. There was a PSA 9 with a Seahawks bird patch that just sold for $10,800. And I was like,
The
patch was ridiculous. And so I figured 6,200. I hate... And boy, I'm giving all the secrets away here. I hate when I'm above you in pricing. I like to come in a little bit under you.
Well, you're 2 for 2 today.
Yeah, and so I'm not really loving the direction of where this potentially could unfold. But as we get to our final card here, it's a basketball card. It's Michael Jordan, the GOAT, 1992 Stadium Club Beam Team and a PSA 10. This is one of my childhood cards and just an absolute classic. This is the regular version. There is a rarer members only iteration, but still just 101 copies in PSA Gem Mint condition. MJ's market's down about 7% the last couple months. A few have popped up for sale in recent months, so demand might not be as high here. Talk to us about the 1992 Stadium Club Beam Team Michael Jordan and give us your best guess.
Trading cards and memorabilia have seen incredible growth as an alternative investment. The company leading the growth? PWCC Marketplace. PWCC Marketplace runs the largest weekly auction of authenticated sports cards, Pokemon cards, comic books, video games, and memorabilia in the world. PWCC Marketplace also has more than 65,000 items listed in their fixed price marketplace that you can make an offer on right now. Head over to pwccmarketplace.com and see why they're the best option for buying and selling trading cards, memorabilia, and all of your collectibles.
Yeah, I love this card. It's, I mean, for anybody who collected cards during, you know, the early 90s, it was one of the chase cards. It's just a really cool, iconic card. Like you mentioned, there's just 100 PSA 10s out of about 2,200 that have been graded. So you got a gem rate of less than 5%, which means it's a pretty tough card. Number one card in the set, for those who don't know, that typically means that it brings a little bit more value. So this card, I've got it 3250. I think that it's a key card for any Jordan collector to have. And yeah, his market's down a little bit, but I think that's just, you know, being down only 7% right now for a guy that has cards that cross every era from 86 to today. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a lot of different cards from a modern perspective too, that could fluctuate in pricing more. So his cards are holding pretty good value considering all the economic factors at play. But yeah, 3250 is my number on this one.
What the hell is going on here?
Are you nose with me?
Did you drive back? Did you fly back from your trip? What's going on? You had extra time this week to prepare, I feel like.
Well, yeah, I came in locked and loaded today. You thought I was going to do the opposite, but hey, I did
because you guys had sold a copy recently. Correct me if I'm wrong, for like $4,900. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and he's just mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I figured you were going to be much higher, and my guess was 3,200. I'm gonna have to figure out how to finagle this on the fly.
Keep so 3,200.
No.
You'll take the under. I'll take the over.
Well, here's the thing. One of us believes in PWCC. Okay. And I think you guys are going to get a little bit better. The market's a little bit down, but you guys got 4,900 on the last comp you guys had. I'm going to come in. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it was a little bit of time between that where, and it was a really nice copy, which I think helped the value.
It was.
This one's a little bit, even though it's a PSA 10 member, not all PSA 10s are created equal.
Yes.
So I'm taking that factor into play. And I do believe that as time goes on, with podcasts like this, and there's some other great podcasts out there as well, you know, the education aspect of this space and people understanding condition, it will create larger variances in the same grade, not only with vintage cards, but with even some of these modern cards as well, or, you know, quasi-modern cards for 90s. So that's kind of where, you know, all those factors came into play for me to come up with that number.
You're flustering me here just a little bit. And so I'm going to actually come in over. So you're at 3250. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said? I'm going to just go 3,400. I wanted to be at 3,200. I'm going to go. I believe in PWCC. I think you guys are going to get a great price on this card. And who knows? I might be a bidder.
Yeah. So you have a unique advantage though, because I cannot bid in our auction. So you can pump you by taking the over on this card. You can actually pump this one and win. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. If it finishes over, I'm going to maybe call for a recount.
You're not allowed to say pump. And I am Yeah, childhood card. So I might be in action here. My thought process is I might get in hold with someone at the PWCC marketing team and make sure this gets some social media posts. And this ends in my favor. But I don't like how this segment's gone for the first time in six episodes. I don't really feel comfortable about this. You've completely changed your style. Someone must have gotten to you and said, hey, this is what Payne's doing. This is what you should be doing, because your style has changed dramatically. If I was profiling you as a magic number guesser.
Look, the real thing here is I was getting my ass kicked the last 5 weeks, so I had to switch something up, and that's exactly what you're seeing now.
All right. We're getting to a very big card here that is ending an auction in a couple days, and it's one of our favorite segments because we get to talk about a really, really rare card.
It's a ghost. We're going to highlight a card that hasn't sold in more than a year right now, or is serial numbered to less than 100 copies produced. We're going to talk about why this card is significant, maybe in terms of hobbies or language or just the overall rarity of it all, and why it's considered a ghost.
All right, this is the part of the show where we get to talk about a ghost, something that is rarely ever seen. People know about it. When it comes up for auction, you just have to go and get it. It's a 2011 Bowman Chrome Super Fractor Bryce Harper Rookie Auto, one of one, and it is in gem mint condition. Talk to us a little bit about this one, Jesse.
Yeah, really excited to have this card. I mean, look, with the run the Phillies made, I was, you know, for this card specifically, I was disappointed that they didn't win it. But this is Harper's best card. You know, I don't believe it's actually sold publicly ever before. And the equivalent for Mike Trout is his 2009 Bowman Chrome Super Fractor, which had sold for just over 2 years ago for $3.9 million. So right now the card's sitting just over, I think, $140,000. And if you look at Harper, this is a guy that I still don't feel like gets enough love. You know, we got a seven-time All-Star. If you compare him to a guy like Mike Trout, who has a couple more years in the league, you know, Trout is a 10-time All-Star. And you've got a two-time NL MVP in Bryce Harper, and Trout is a three-time AL MVP. So, you know, there's a lot of similarities there. You've got all MLB first team for Harper once. Trout only has two. You know, so if you look at these two guys and compare them, they're not too far off. Now, I know you can look at the WAR numbers for those, and there's a pretty big discrepancy from Trout and Harper, and I think part of that is because of fielding and stolen bases. But, you know, Harper's actually made a deep playoff run, and he's made it to the World Series. And I love Mike Trout. He's Captain America. Everybody loves him, too. He's got a great brand. But he has made one playoff series in his career, and he got swept. And so that's a big deal when you're looking at, for me, when you're looking at a guy's career. I want to see Trout in the playoffs. I want to see him perform well and be clutch. And that's exactly what Harper was this year. He was absolutely clutch in crunch time. So, look, the other thing at play here could be brand, right? I mentioned that Trout is Captain America. Harper might be a little bit more brash. But he's also a guy that, you know, didn't sneak up on us a little bit like Trout did. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in high school. He was dubbed the chosen one like LeBron James was coming out of high school. So he's had a target on his back and huge expectations since day one. And, you know, for where this card's sitting now, for this card not to get high six figures, I think is a shame based on, you know, the history of what some of these, you know, these out of five reds Bowman Chrome autographs are going for some of these players that have done absolutely nothing. So I love this card. I really hope it does a great number because I think it's crazy undervalued right now where it's sitting.
That's why this card is so tough for me to gauge, because you compare it to the prospects that have done absolutely nothing and you're like, whoo. I mean, this is an established player. This is the Super Fractor one of one. This needs to mirror some of those sales that we've seen recently from guys that have done absolute squat. And then I start to think about it a little bit. And, you know, obviously it's a beautiful card. If you're a baseball collector, right, the first Bowman Chrome Rookie one of one is what you aspire to have.
Yep.
And, you know, you hit it perfectly that the decision to put this on the market had a little gamble element to it, right? When it was initially consigned, the Phillies were leading 2-1 in the World Series. And if they went on to beat the Astros, you could have saw this card sell for 2x what it might ultimately go for now. And listen, this is such a tough card for me because when it comes down to investing, we can get a little caught up in our cocoon. And I see it every week from bettors, right? They think what they saw last has to happen next. Right. And I feel like the players that are in front of us get viewed as the greatest ever without proper reflection and comparisons to the players of, you know, yesteryear that we've all forgotten about. And knowing 20 years from now, that's exactly how most of these current players will be viewed in the future makes cards like this tough for me to price, right? When I look at Bryce Harper, you hit it perfectly in that he's been in the limelight since he was a high school, and there's videos on the internet of him like bombing home runs.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, it was just awesome to see. But you know, he's not sniffing 3,000 hits. And if you asked me 3 years ago if Harper was a lock for 500 home runs, I would have said hell yeah. But he lost basically his age 27 season, which was cut short. This past season was cut a little bit short, even though he made a great run towards the end of the season and put the Phillies on his back during this playoff run. But he's got 285 home runs after 11 seasons. And so that's basically a current pace of 26 a season. He's going to have to play 8 more years and hit 26 home runs a year to eclipse 500 home runs. And I'm not sure that's a guarantee. So stuff like this makes me a little nervous, but boy, is it a beautiful card. And I was actually pulling for the Phillies to win, obviously not a huge Astros guy. And had they won, I think the gamble would have been awesome putting this for sale. I'm actually, and I don't want to divulge too much, I'm aware of what this went for privately because I know the seller right. of the card. So I'm not going to divulge that, but I think this is a great card, and obviously as a one of one, just an absolute ghost.
Yeah, and look, you mentioned not making the 3,000 hit club. I mean, let's be real, with all of Trout's injuries, he's not on pace either.
No, he's not even gonna come close.
Which is crazy to think about. We're talking about one of the greatest baseball players of all time, quote unquote, the people are saying right now, right, in our space. And the guy might not hit 3,000. He probably won't. But it's crazy to think about. So when you compare these two guys in pricing, you know, we can do this till we're blue in the face, right? Play the comparison game based on final sales numbers. But it's just, it's wild where this card is sitting and seeing some of the other sales that we've had even the last 3 months. I just think this card should, it's a really important card. And if you're a Harper fan, you got to have it.
So this is the segment where we compare two assets that are wildly different. It's time to get to it because this week is really, really intriguing.
So we doing this or we doing that? You tell me and we'll tell you. We're going to compare two cards right now of similar value that are completely different. Let me give you an example. Let's just say for argument's sake, you have a vintage Mickey Mantle baseball card worth $30,000. But you also have a modern day Joe Burrow rookie card worth 30 grand. Which one would you rather have and why? You tell us, we're going to tell you right now.
Okay, so I busted your balls a little bit earlier in the show about implementing multiple soccer cards. I get it. Here we are.
You hate soccer. I get it too.
I used to play at a fairly high level.
Did you?
But
I didn't know that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Did you know I played in high school?
25 pounds ago. Yes, you told me when we were getting absolutely sloshed one night at a card show. Oh. So,
well, you're
you also said you played
better than mine.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You also played golf, I thought, in high school. Is this correct?
Golf and soccer.
Yes.
Those are the two
golf
sports.
Golf and soccer. Lefty, yeah. If I remember.
No, that is incorrect.
No. Man.
You pulled that one out of nowhere.
Okay. Maybe I'm not a good drunk.
Hey, after a few drinks, everything isn't as clear.
This is accurate. But what is clear are the two cards that we are comparing. The first is a 2018 Panini Eminence white box Cristiano Ronaldo patch auto 1/1. Soccer is certainly the largest sport in the world. MLS is becoming more popular and accepted in the United States over the last handful of years. World Cup, as we've alluded to, starts on the 20th, about a week from now. So you're getting a little bit of a surge with soccer cards. Mm-hmm. The one that we're comparing it to is a set that we've talked about numerous times because it's that important. It's a 1952 Topps Willie Mantle PSA 4 with some great eye appeal. So that's the comparison this week, a modern day soccer card versus a vintage baseball card. I'm going to let you talk about both and ultimately make your choice, sir.
Yeah, well, I got to call you out first because you just called it a 1952 Topps Willie Mantle. So we took
a little combination
of Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle there. Which, that'd be a cool card.
Yes, that would be. That would be.
Okay, so yeah, I picked these. Obviously, they're just totally different cards. And this 2018 white box 101 Ronaldo on card auto. It has a match worn patch on it. That's a nice patch. These white box, quote unquote, 101s where they have the design on the back. It's like a circle with, it's not stamped. It's like printed on there that it's a 101. These do not sell for the same as a stamped or a hand numbered card normally would. So, you know, this card sold for about $9,900 a week ago, which I still think is a good deal for something that is on card auto, match worn, and a 101 for one of the greatest soccer players of all time. I don't think that's a question at all. So I love this card. I thought that was a good deal, whoever bought it for $9,900. And then you look at the 52 Topps Willie Mays in a PSA 4. That was a PWCCA sticker. We've also mentioned this card before on the podcast about how undervalued it is in comparison to the 52 Topps Mickey Mantle. I mean, look, this is a PSA 4. It sold for $10,500 a week ago. It is a critically important second-year cards. When we talk about second-year cards, this might be like the set for second-year cards for some of these rookies from 51 Bowman.
Yep.
And the last Mantle PSA 4 that sold with an A sticker on it was just a month ago for $120,000. So you're talking about almost 12x difference between Mays and Mantle. And just based on potential ROI, the delta, I'm going vintage. I'm going 52 Mays. But honestly, this week is a complete coin flip for me when you think about a match-worn soccer card, because I also feel like because it's the most popular sport in the world, because our market still hasn't grown yet internationally, where I think we're going to have a lot more reach with Fanatics and those kind of people in the future, I expect soccer cards to still make a massive run over the next 4 to 6 years. And I think long-term, that Ronaldo card could do really, really, really well. So it's a coin flip for me, but I'm going Mays.
Boy, I don't know what happened to you. So this, you're just stealing all my thunder here. When you presented this, I thought it would be so obvious as to what I would pick. You couldn't possibly go the same route. Now, the other thing is here, I've been up since 5. I've recorded multiple podcasts. I've pumped in a lot of bets on Monday. Willie Mays is who we're talking about here. Willie Mantle, I'm not quite sure where that came from, but hey, it'd be a heck of a baseball player.
Oh, were they God, to yeah, have let's a baby. Combine the two.
So you're getting a little bit of a surge from soccer with, you know, the World Cup around. 2018 Eminence is a super premium product, and 2018 was its debut year for soccer. So the first of something creates that premium. Now, it sounds like Ronaldo is having a bit of Carmelo Anthony syndrome from a few years ago, where he couldn't really accept he wasn't one of the world's best players currently, and that's caused some contention in his reunion with Manchester United. So Ronaldo's been in the news for the wrong reasons, calling out his manager recently.
Yep.
My gut says, to your point, game used, soccer, world's largest sport, being far more accepted in the United States. I mean, the MLS is continuing to grow. My gut says it could have the higher upside than the Topps Willie Mays, but I am just all about slow and steady, hitting singles and doubles. And I won't talk about the Willie Mays too much because I own one, so I don't want to sound like I'm pumping it. But if I own it and I don't own any soccer cards, I'm either an idiot or that's telling you everything you need to know about this. Let me ask you one thing about the Willie Mays card here, and divulge a little bit about this, because I know we've talked about it numerous times through this show where we've mentioned eye appeal with vintage cards, and we've mentioned, you know, top 15%, top 30%. Talk to us a little bit about what PWCC is doing there for vintage cards and maybe the evolution of eye appeal and why it's more widely accepted in the market right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're looking at a vintage card, a lot of these are designed with some kind of border around them. Way more obvious of a border, kind of like a painting, which these 52 Topps cards are, than those of some of these modern cards that don't have a real natural border to them. So when you're looking at a card from an eye appeal perspective, the number one thing that stands out from it being attractive to the eye is the centering of the card. And so having that border be what we call like dead nut centered is really, really important. And it's a large percentage of the eye appeal process. It's about 50% of when you do the calculation and you're looking at these cards. So centering is a huge factor. And then you can look at, you know, how nice the corners are for the respective grade, how nice the edges are, or the print or the surface, right? So there's a lot of different factors that go into it, but this card specifically, the centering is so good that, you know, it got the PWCCA. And when they're grading these cards, these are all the factors they take into play when they are grading cards. But there's going to be a card like this where maybe there's something on the back that affected it from a surface perspective that doesn't really affect the eye appeal. And that's why it did grade a PSA 4, but we think it's really nice. So, you know, there's times where I'll look at a card that, let's call it a PSA 7 of some card, and I'm like, man, that thing looks like a 9 to me. And so it'll get a PWCC S sticker, which is the top 5%. But then you do notice that maybe on the backside on a corner or a surface, there's a blemish that caused it to get a 7 instead of a 9. But it doesn't really affect the eye appeal per se of the card. And so it's really appealing to the eye. And you want to pay a premium if you're going to look at these things for how nice they are.
Makes complete sense. I appreciate that, because I know sometimes we just take it as normal verbiage in our daily daily lingo when we're talking about this. And I've had a couple questions like, what does this mean? What does that mean? And certainly we've seen, at least over the last 5, 6, 7 years with you guys leading the charge, the evolution in, hey, a PSA 4 isn't a PSA 4 isn't a PSA 4. And some of these look better than each other. And because of that, they should be viewed a little bit differently. Episode 6 of Cardboard Chat. Jesse, I'm going to let you close with anything that's on your mind. Speak to us a little bit. If not, we can get out of Dodge.
Yeah, look, we've got a premier auction closing this Thursday. Our weekly auction actually that closes this Sunday is the largest weekly auction we've ever had. So we've got a lot of really good stuff available for sale. If you haven't been on our website before, get on there and check it out. PWCCmarketplace.com. Super easy to get registered and bid if you want to participate. But the market is, you know, it's had a pullback. This could be a really good buying opportunity for a lot of people to get into the space now when stuff's soft. When's it going to take off? Are we at the bottom? I don't know. Nobody has a crystal ball, but I do like some of the pricing and where stuff's sitting. And, you know, as always, feel free to reach out to myself on IG, reach out to Payne. Let us know if you have any questions, if you want any advice for any cards you're looking at. Happy to talk and happy to help.
Beautiful. And there is always a link in the description of the podcast to PWCC. So click the link, check it out, surf it. It's a great website. And again, if you have any questions, Jesse is always there for you.
Make sure you follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. Subscribe to Bet the Board and get notified when new episodes of Cardboard Chat air on Tuesdays. And be sure to stop by PWCCmarketplace.com for all your collecting needs.